This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Blues artist Brandon Santini says he gets side-eye from some traditionalist blues people when he plays contemporary blues songs.
I think a lot of those traditionalists can see that, you know, with these new songs, that it's still very rooted in the simple rhythmic forms of a lot of blues chords.
Brandon Santini chats before his outdoor Bloomington concert, plus learn about the patent medicine business in a new episode of our feature McHistory. Dozens of collages have given a Bloomington Normal artist the interior space to stave off the social deprivation of the pandemic. And Tim Shelley reports on a rare thing indeed, a truly open seat election for Congress in Illinois. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Illinois State University trustees took what University President Larry Dietz called a beginning step toward bringing a new engineering college to campus. The university will seek approval from the Board of Higher Education to launch the program. Several graduate student workers protested the move. Teacher's assistant Natalie Gibson says the university should take care of its underpaid and undervalued graduate workers first.
It is unethical for us to approve millions of dollars for a new project while employees of this university have to go to the food pantry in order to feed their families.
ISU and the grad student union have been unable to come to terms on a contract. Trustees also approved a 3% increase in room and board rates for next year. Tuition will stay the same. Illinois State University has rededicated its Bone Student Center after a $33 million renovation. The four-year project included the addition of new meeting and event spaces, new restaurants, and new offices for student support services. Aaron Watts with ISU's events management says the new east side entrance serves as the new front door to campus.
We want folks, when they arrive on campus, to know this is Illinois State University, and we think that the updated exterior and interior really entrances really reflect more of that now.
The student center also uses more natural light and open concept seating areas. Three more people have died from COVID-19 complications in McLean County, one man in his 30s, the other two over 70. McLean County Health Department spokesperson Marianne Manco says she's worried people will let down the guard when the state moves to the bridge reopening phase next week.
We're concerned that people are going to think that this is over and that they're not really all that concerned about it. And it is a fear for us that people will read that and hear what they want to hear.
The county reports 73 daily coronavirus cases, but the weekly total is its lowest since March. The Town of Normal's EV Town initiative is getting a reboot. 6 years ago, Normal used federal grant money to install 48 electric vehicle charging stations in the community to boost use of electric vehicles. Mayor Chris Koos says there will be a second bite at that apple this fall.
We're going to partner with Rivian on moving that forward. And until they get a car under production, start rolling off the line. We just don't have the bandwidth to do that.
With more than 100,000 people living in Bloomington Normal, 48 charging stations will not be sufficient. Goose says most EV owners put in a home charging station, but having public charging infrastructure is also important. Illinois State University has begun working with five Central Illinois Community Colleges on an elementary school teacher preparation program meant for people who might not normally be able to take part in those programs. ISU Dean of Education Jim Wolfinger says students and community college presidents worked to develop the program for more than a year.
What we hear is, how do we deal with a teacher shortage where we have people who live in the community who would like to be teachers, but they're place bound, right? They have a mortgage. They have a spouse with a job, they have kids in school. They can't pick up and move to Bloomington for an extended period of time.
Wolfinger says if the initial elementary ed effort succeeds, the model could expand to areas such as special education or early childhood education. Illinois' economy has bounced back faster than expected, even as the pandemic continues. That's good news for the state budget, but won't solve Illinois' long-running debt problems. Hannah Meisel has more.
Illinois saw sharp declines in tax revenue last year as the pandemic recession gripped the state. But as COVID and accompanying restrictions have eased and consumer spending has increased, Illinois has seen larger-than-expected tax receipts. Governor J.B. Pritzker says that news means he's no longer pushing to skip $350 million in increased spending on schools, an idea even fellow Democrats criticized. But the state still has a $1.4 billion structural budget deficit, and the governor isn't backing down from his promise to reverse or delay nearly $1 billion in tax incentives for businesses.
I will continue to pursue closing corporate tax loopholes, corporate welfare that mostly benefits large international businesses that have profited greatly even during the pandemic.
Republicans in the business community say it's disingenuous for Pritzker to call those tax credits loopholes, especially since he signed a few of them into law in 2019. I'm Hannah Meisel.
This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. May is Better Hearing Month, a time for raising awareness about communication disorders and their solutions. The doctors of audiology at BNA see this month as a great opportunity to start building or rebuilding the most important connections in life. More information at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. A truly open-seat election for Congress is relatively rare and tends to attract a lot of interest from ambitious polls. Congresswoman Sherry Bustos' retirement creates a wide-open field in the 17th District next year. Tim Shelley reports.
After five terms in Congress, Democratic Representative Sherry Bustos surprised many political watchers with the announcement she won't run again next year. Bustos says the decision has nothing to do with upcoming redistricting, or her narrower-than-projected win over Republican Esther Joy King last year.
It's a very personal decision. It's a family decision. This is a tough line of work on families.
Bustos' exit makes it more difficult for Democrats to hold on to the Northwestern Illinois district. It also affects the battle to keep the party's narrow House majority. Robin Johnson is a political scientist at Monmouth College. He says while Bustos is a Democrat, her centrist voting record conforms with constituents in her swing district. Johnson says whoever runs should pay attention to that.
I think a candidate on the Democratic side with that kind of profile will have an advantage in a general election.
Bustos is among the handful of House Democrats able to win re-election in both 2016 and 2020 in a Trump-leaning district. Republicans quickly placed the 17th on their list of 2022 targets. It's not clear what kind of district the 17th will be next year after the once-a-decade redistricting. Bustos says it won't be easy for Republicans, and new maps might make it safer for a Democrat.
If we pick up more of the city of Peoria, if we pick up more of the city of Rockford in this congressional district, then it could lean more Democrat than it does right now. And so it just depends on what happens with redistricting, but it's not an easy district for anybody politically.
Illinois will lose one seat in the next reapportionment. 18th District Republican Congressman Darren LaHood says that presents an opportunity to reunite divided communities like Peoria and Rockford into single districts.
Peoria shouldn't be split, in my view. I think we should draw district lines along county lines and city lines. I think that makes a lot more sense. I think when you divide up communities, it adds to confusion on who their member of Congress is.
Bustos and LaHood's scenarios are not the only ones possible. Democrats in Springfield control redistricting. Billy Hall said as the chairman of the Peoria County Democratic Central Committee.
You know, we don't know if we're going to push the 18th farther south or east or where it's going to go. So I'm not sure. I mean, it just depends on where the boundaries are actually going to go.
Even with new maps in play, the race will attract significant bipartisan interest. And Monmouth College political scientist Robin Johnson says that also means national party involvement.
I think the race will probably attract quite a few candidates from both parties. Open seat elections usually do that.
Esther Joy King, the 2020 Republican candidate, declared her 2022 candidacy shortly after Bustos' retirement announcement. While she didn't respond to interview requests, King said in a statement announcing her own candidacy that the 17th Congressional District, quote, deserves so much better than what the liberal elites have been serving them up in Washington, end quote. Bustos says there's a lot of strong potential Democratic candidates in the wings. She says she'll support the party nominee. Some political observers say those who want to run face a difficult issue of timing. They might want to wait to get in to see the new district boundaries and whether those help. If they wait too long, though, they lose the opportunity to raise money, form a campaign organization, and gain support from party leaders. As for her own future, Bustos says she still has 20 months to figure it out. Over the past decades, she's gone from working as a journalist to healthcare to Congress.
I'm passionate. I'm high energy, and I want to use all that for something that I hope will be big and meaningful.
Bustos' term ends in January 2023. I'm Tim Shilley.
This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bowl Street is located on the west side of Normal Avenue in Normal and is named after Joseph J.W. Bowles, who produced a very popular cure-all medicine at his home in the same area back in the late 1890s. In this edition of McHistory, you will meet the old singing soldier that traveled by medicine wagon selling his natural liver and kidney cure across McLean County.
There never was half as good a remedy for kidney and liver trouble ever made in McLean County or the state of Illinois.
We're here today to kind of celebrate the eccentric career of one Joseph W. Bowles.
This is John McAlinsky. I'm a volunteer at the McLean County Museum of History.
This is Bill Kemp, librarian, McLean County Museum of History. Bloomington Normal, beginning in the Civil War period into the 20th century, was a regional center for the manufacturing and sale of patent medicines, what are often called quack medicines, when you could sell all sorts of wonder cures.
The National Kidney and Liver Cure is the best appetizer, blood purifier, and tonic on earth.
So from the early 1880s into the early 19-teens, Joseph W. Bowles made and sold bottles and packages from his residence and factory on Normal Avenue. Bowles advertised his, quote, purely vegetable, end quote, remedy, said it acted as a blood purifier.
It will not sour in warm weather. It beats other so-called kidney and liver cures 99 times out of 100. Ask your druggist for it.
Now, what was really in this cure? Well, it was likely a pharmacopoeia of herbal and vegetable ingredients with perhaps a splash or two of alcohol or even a more illicit property to kind of give it that extra kick. J.W. Bowles of Normal sold his miracle cure for $1 a bottle. $1 in the early 1890s would be the equivalent today, adjusted for inflation, to about $30. So $30 a bottle, we're not talking about just chump change. And the claim was that a 6-bottle dose would cure whatever ails you, from headaches to constipation to nervousness to rheumatism to neuralgia to scrofula to just general disability. This could cure it all.
Take no other. It is the best.
So obviously, this is before the passage of the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906. So you could basically make all sorts of promises, knowing that you're not really going to cure much, selling a promise, a dream. And J.W. Bowles did that well. So he was known as, quote, the old singing soldier. And he traveled by medicine wagon. And the Pantograph noted that hundreds of thousands know his voice and the twang of his banjo and his guitar. His son Earl and his daughter Laura, who went by the name of La Pearl. So you had La Pearl and Earl travel with their father, J.W.
I am Earl Bowles. I play and sing for the National Kidney and Liver Cure. My father is the sole proprietor and manufacturer of it and stands behind every bottle and package with a big silver dollar.
And they would perform alongside him on summer sales tours. Bowles was famous for offering
satisfaction guaranteed or money cheerfully refunded.
In 1911, J.W. Bowles attempted to form a stock company, but that failed. He eventually sold his acreage in North Normal. J.W. Bowles survives today as a street, and the folks that live on the west side of Normal Avenue can take some pleasure in knowing that they are on the grounds of a relatively successful patent medicine manufacturer of the late 19th, early 20th century.
This episode of McHistory was produced by WGLT's Ariel Jones, featuring Bill Kemp and John McAlinsky of the McLean County Museum of History. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. When the pandemic hit, artist Jim Neely needed a place to escape to, so he created one. Actually, dozens of them in his 12-by-12-inch collage pieces dubbed Obsession Tiles. Arts correspondent Brianna Groh talks with Neely about his latest exhibit.
Guests can now view 100 of Neely's tiles in a new exhibition, Painting with Paper, at Hanger Art Company in downtown Bloomington. Each piece is the product of Neely letting his overactive imagination run wild.
I have a very fertile kind of mind that leads me in a lot of directions and occasionally down some mole holes.
Neely says the works have a good dose of the kind of irreverence his operation Wisecracker Studios is known for, but with new elements of the fantastical.
I think for me, beginning this work in 2020, in early March, I felt like some escape and some fantasy and just sort of clearing your mind of all the things that were going through all of our heads and all the unknown and all the kind of darkness. I need to just, you know, kind of creatively run away from that.
The result is a serious divergence from the three-dimensional monochrome assemblage pieces Neely was making at the time.
The pieces are much quicker, and they're more spontaneous, and they're really shot with color.
In one of Neely's escapist scenes, a young Elizabeth Taylor can be seen surveying her estate at, wait, is that the Gailey Eye Clinic building?
It's a building that I've always been obsessed with. And the design of the building itself is this kind of crazy mashup of French chateau and with the copper mansard roof. And it's also like kind of a stately ranch house that you'd see up in Bel Air and Los Angeles. So I used this depiction of the building, and I added a big round swimming pool in the front, and I added towering palm trees in the back of the building. And I put Elizabeth Taylor right in the foreground in white hot pants and go-go boots.
Neely found another unlikely source of inspiration while rummaging through a junk shop in Indiana. Vintage ektachrome portraits of an unknown woman. Neely's mind swirled with questions.
Why would her family have let these family photographs come to this, you know, this junk shop? And who was she and what did she do? And so I kind of adopted her as a relative, and I named her. She's named Helene.
In the series Unlikeliest of Situations, Neely imagines a new, glamorous life for his subject, from dancing with Mick Jagger to getting her hair done at Versailles.
I mean, there's some pretty wacky stuff.
Collage is not a new medium for Neely, but rather one that predates any formal art education.
My mom hung on to one of my masterpieces from junior high, and my mom is gone now, but I still have this collage, and this piece hangs in my studio, and it's just kind of this reminder of kind of the roots.
As a student at Illinois State University, Neely's professors taught him a methodical and meticulous approach to art.
This was way before computers, so everything was very kind of hand done and cut with X-Acto knives and, you know, rubber cementing down elements to create work. And that discipline has really informed me as an artist today.
He knows it's not the way a lot of collage is done these days, but that's what Neely enjoys about his own old school approach.
It definitely has somebody's fingerprints on it. It is made by hand, so I think there's this kind of intrinsic value to that.
Neely wants to give guests at Hanger Art Company a chance to get their fingerprints on his work, too. From the master wall of 100 tiles, guests will be able to select 9 tiles to arrange in their own fantastical scene. Neely says he's excited for visitors to use his images to tell a story that resonates with them, in much the way he fashions his own collages. I'm Brianna Groh.
Jim Neely's exhibition, Painting with Paper, is showing at Hanger Art Company in downtown Bloomington now through July. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media. National touring blues artist Brandon Santini says he wrote a ton of songs during the pandemic downtime, all intended for a new album to be released later this year. You can hear those songs when Santini plays jazz up front in Bloomington tomorrow night. The Springfield resident tells WGLT's John Norton the sonics of those songs will continue the rockin' style of his 2019 award-winning album, The Long Shot.
Some of it's a little more blues rock, if you want to say. There's going to be more harmonica again, but, you know, I still will be able to feature my, you know, my great musicians that I get to play with. I say, hey, baby, don't you come around here no more.
For so long, you had to be locked into traditional blues if you weren't doing, you know, the straight 50s, 60s stuff. People who were doing more contemporary things were kind of getting the side eye a little bit, right? That they weren't real blues people. I'm guessing that doesn't really happen anymore.
Well, there's still a lot of, you know, in the blues industry, you have your traditionalists, for sure. You know, I'm very much a traditionalist at heart. But I think a lot of the new stuff perhaps may not be up the alley of a lot of traditionalists. However, I think a lot of those traditionalists as well, on the other hand, can see that, you know, with these new songs, that it's still very rooted in the simple rhythmic forms of a lot of blues chords. You know, some of us even, I like to call it Mississippi trance music in a way. You know, I'm heavily influenced by the Hill Country Blues from down there. So this is kind of a melting pot of a lot of different influences. And, you know, there's been no pressure to really write these songs, no deadline over the last year. So I was able to not really force anything out and just be able to take my time on things to make sure that, you know, that I'm giving them the songs the attention they need.
You mentioned that you've been doing a lot of writing since last time we talked. What is the best song you have ever written, Brandon?
Ooh, that's tough. That's like picking the favorite child, of course. You know, I think One More Day, which was actually on my most recent album, The Long Shot, I think that is the song that was actually, since we started performing the song live, I get so many people coming up saying how much that song has impacted them in some sort of fashion. You know, I have people coming up who are terminally ill. I remember one lady came out. She had not gone out of the house in months and months. She wanted to make it out to our show, and she came out, and that was really touching. So I think that song is my favorite. And it's also a very personal song to me, yet very simple lyrically, of course.
Us an idea, if you don't mind, about where you were coming at with that song, even though it might mean different things to different people?
Yeah. You know, at one point in my life, I was down in the bottom of a barrel, basically, it seemed like, with no way out. It's kind of like a, you know, a rat chasing its tail around with drug addiction that I was dealing with back in my 20s. And we all deal with problems, whether it's, we're all alike, depression, anxiety, overeating, alcohol, drug addiction. We've all had things in our past, and unfortunately a lot of people didn't make it through those hard times and didn't realize the amount of love that surrounded them. Unfortunately, a lot of people in their lives thinking they're at a dead end road. But you know, my theory on that is the people who were around me when I was in that sort of mentality a long time ago, those people pulled me out of that and showed me that they do love me. And you know, whoever or whatever you pray to, you know, it's very important to just keep asking them, you know, to help you through just one more day. It's quite simple. And it's very much, even though I didn't go to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's very much the same idea of make it through one day at a time. You got to stand up and fight in the face of evil. You got to stand up and fight for the faith of your freedom. You gotta stand against the tide of war.
Well, you mentioned you had some people help you out of that. How much of your music also helps you do that, or helped you do that?
Oh, you know, music's it's therapeutic for a musician. You know, being able to dive into play music full time and to be headfirst into that is very much a privilege that even at some points in our careers, we forget that it's a privilege. It's not only an honor, but it's a privilege for us to be able to do it. So, you know, the moments that I realized that it is a privilege helped me through all of that and still do with whatever it is going on.
Springfield-based blues artist Brandon Santini speaking with WGLT's John Norton. Santini plays jazz up front in downtown Bloomington tomorrow night. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlinker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.